Alright guys, welcome to the show. This is Chud and Adam's podcast. I'm not sure which one it's going to be. I don't know if Deborah's coming. I sent her an email. She should have the calendar ready to go and know that she's supposed to be on today, but who knows? Who knows with that lady?
I think we'll have a good time, whether it's into or gets red pilled.
Yeah. But yeah, I don't know. How's everything going up there?
It's going pretty good. We just got done with way too hot weather for me. Nothing like last year, but some 90 degree days.
Still June, so.
Yeah, exactly. We got time.
That 115 didn't come for us until August, so we'll see. Yeah, we went from 58 to 98, and then
yesterday. Like in a day, or was that a high one day and then a high the next day?
It was like from within a week.
Yeah, okay.
It didn't like ease into it. It went like 58, 72, 98.
Mm-hmm. So that was 98. When it was 98, what was your sky looking like?
It was clear.
Clear?
Bright blue. Blue. Yeah.
Bright blue.
A deep blue, yeah. Deeper.
So I was watching it as I always do now. And we had some pretty deep blue skies, but it was down around 70. It was like pretty nice weather. But they started spraying one direction, north to south, like all day. And they didn't stick around long. They would expand real fast. And then the next day, they were all going east to west, also expanding and disappearing. And I swear, every time the sky got whiter and whiter and whiter. And then suddenly it was our 90 degree weather. And the whole sky, I mean, the tiniest bit of blue in it, but almost just pure white. And so hot, just like almost no shadow, but yet like the sun is just beaming down on us. Yeah. A little different than the way I think of hot weather is going, but I didn't observe this so carefully my whole life. So, you know, I might've missed some big clues a long time ago that I didn't pay attention to.
Yeah. And then yesterday it was like 62 degrees and like gray.
Yeah. Yeah. And then yesterday that was us here as it came to, I was closer to 70, but in the 60s, and it tried raining all day, but it never really came down, just a little bit of moisture here and there. And now today it looked like that, but no rain. And now it's clearing up now that I'm coming down to the basement.
Yeah.
So you said you got some mowing done.
Yeah.
Are you talking, the Husqvarna or the Coyote?
The Cub Cadet.
Oh, Cub Cadet or the Coyote.
Yeah, the lawnmower. But yeah, like our grass is up to my shoulder at some spots. And yeah, let's see, it's Wednesday. So Monday I was mowing and I ran over like a buried like little stump from a little shrub that I cut out and didn't stump it low enough.
Yeah.
And it bent one of my mower blades into like a 90 degree
angle. Damn. So,
yeah.
Dude, but, I hit some long grass with my riding lawnmower the other day. I stalled it so quick. I was like, what the fuck could I have even hit? I remembered as soon as I opened the flail and looked in there, I'd tossed a corn knife over that way.
Yeah.
You know, corn knife is like that curved one. It's like a machete that's curved on the inside. So you like pull with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd tossed it in the grass right there and I nailed it too. So it was like sticking up and I wouldn't forget to grab it, but the grass grew up over it and I drove right onto that thing. Luckily it didn't fuck anything up too bad. Just a basic spot on a blade, but
yeah they say you're supposed to change them every year anyway, and luckily they had replacements that's at Tractor Supply.
Okay.
So I just went over there and learned how to take the mowing deck off anyway, which I needed to do. So
sure that's good practice anyway, just to know your mower well.
Yeah.
And you know, flipping that thing over, hit it with a
froze up a little, buddy. But yeah,
a hose while you got it off and just, you know, am I frozen?
You froze.
Did I freeze?
You're back.
I'm back. Shit. I'm still trying, man. I put in a better cable.
Yeah.
We'll see. We'll see how it goes. Maybe that was just a tiny thing.
Yeah.
It fixed itself fast, I think. So.
Yeah. But yeah, it's cool. Ours has a it has a little on the deck. It has like a little attachment where you can screw in a hose.
Sure.
And then just like turn on the water and spray it out.
Have you messed with that much?
No, I haven't needed. I haven't used
it. I got a tip for you on that. I got a tip for you if you haven't messed with them. I'd used those a few times on a couple different mowers, and I was always like, this doesn't, I mean, it's not bad. It can't hurt it. It's fine, but it didn't really do the trick until I realized I saw a video on YouTube, and it was like, oh, this makes way more sense. You want to get into a flat spot and drop your deck all the way to where it's touching the ground, then kick on that water and run it, and it'll stay inside of there and bust up everything.
Got it.
And then lift it back up, and it'll just shoot everything out. And it's like, I was just using it wrong for a while.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll try that out. But other than that, I had the contractors over at the house today. They're starting on our new, we're putting a bathroom in. We're putting a bathroom in.
Okay.
HVAC isn't until August. So.
Okay.
But yeah, it's pretty cool. They took out like a whole exterior wall and like reframed it and put a window in the first day. Mm-hmm. So different contractors this time, they mean business. So that's good. And then seems like we haven't podcasted in a long time. I still got to put out our last episode. Did you get a chance to listen to the one we did with Julie Mastrini?
I did. I really dug that, man.
Yeah,
that was cool, great. Yeah. I didn't know what to expect at all as I started it. But yeah, I was thrilled all the way through.
Yeah, I really liked it. I wish Deborah would have participated a little bit more. I thought she would have just because of feminism, you know?
Sure. I thought she got something out of that though, from just listening. You know, she seemed to really hear a lot of the stuff that she said, which was good.
Yeah. Have you seen, I've been noticing a lot on Twitter, there's like a pretty, at least in my bubble, there's like a pretty heavy contingent of like attractive millennial women who are extremely against porn and like speaking out about it like constantly on Twitter. So that's pretty awesome. I kind of want to reach out to some of them, like have them come on to make the millennial woman's case against porn.
I'd love to hear that. That sounds awesome.
And like from like a non-religious point of view, you know?
Sure. I'd take a religious point of view too, but yeah. You know. But yeah, just that young, I'd like to hear more millennial points of view on a lot of things, really.
Yeah.
Or even younger than millennial, I guess. Because like I'm technically a millennial.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I mean, I think it's zennial. I got to think back to my episode of The World As It Is Today on generations. I think it was zennial is the who's 18 right now or so.
Zoomer.
It was, they gave it a couple names. It was Generation Z, also known as Zoomers or zennials.
Dude, I was just listening to Ryan Dawson on Pete Quinones' news show.
Yeah.
And he said, like, I think he said Generation Z or Zoomers or whatever, if that's the same thing, like have like 20% of the boys are identifying as transgender.
That's stupid because it's not even true. Like, even if that was a stat, I don't think that the people who are answering that question are being truthful. And even if they think they're answering it truthful, like, let's check in on that in 5 years and see how many stuck with it for 5 years.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know.
If they can get them to stick with it right away with the chemicals.
That ups it so much. Because, I mean, we all went through crazy phases when we were young, or most people did, where, you know, we did stupid shit. And I would stack this up as being the same as all that stupid shit that anybody else ever did. But it's a little different when you're taking drugs that alter your body for the rest of your life.
Yeah, I just had like spiky hair and like fucking dirty clothes.
I got like a stupid tattoo that I wasn't proud of shortly after, but like even that's just a tattoo, you know.
I've got a whole bunch of those, so
yeah, right.
Those can come off. Hurts really bad though.
You just gotta scratch it real hard, right?
Second time getting them off hurts about 10 times worse than putting them on.
Yeah.
It's really, really bad. I got my knuckles lasered. Mm-hmm. Fuck, man. It like, I wasn't expecting it at all. I had to like go home and like lay on the couch in the dark for a day after the first session.
Oh, that sounds terrible.
It's super bad.
But doesn't it just kind of black it out or purple it out, sort of?
You can like get it to, if you do it enough, it'll go away eventually. Altogether. But I always did it to like get it just covered with something else.
I never had anything removed. I always just figured if anything bugged me too much, I would just tattoo over it.
Yeah, I've done that too. So, but yeah, what else is going on? Have you been paying attention to the world at all? I haven't.
Yeah, I've been trying my best not to. On the newest world as it is today, or maybe it was the previous one, I kind of talked about how I haven't been listening to as many podcasts and things. I've been listening to a lot more music. But I still, of course, watch the world to a certain degree or another. There's this whole Roe v. Wade thing going on, and I'm so not into it.
Yeah,
I'm as not into that as I wasn't into Ukraine. And it sucks a lot too, because I've had a few personal conversations, like real life conversations. I mean, where I'm pretty passionate about the issue, and you know, it kind of sucks because they're really trying to divide us.
So check it out. It happened on a Friday, right?
Mm-hmm.
The next Saturday, I went into Portland. I went to a restaurant and ate like a late lunch by myself. And then Emily and I participated in like this kind of like vintage clothes market deal where I sold like a whole bunch of like fermented drinks.
Oh, cool.
At her new studio, they have it. And, like, people just come in, like, all these, like, hipster chicks that are all selling, like, ugly used clothes. And it's the kind of people that you would expect to be, like, screeching about this kind of stuff. And I went to a restaurant in Southeast Portland, and then I went to that and sat there for 4 hours. And it's, you know, it's heavily gay and trans attended. And I didn't just, you know, it's like port, like the dark side of Portlandia, just gross. And I didn't hear it mentioned one time, not even a mention.
Hmm. Hmm.
So I think what it showed, what I learned from that is that these people that you think are like, nobody's like a true believer.
Yeah.
Very, very few people. I think they're just saying stuff. You know, people just say things because it's what they're supposed to say.
That's our talking point for the moment. So we're going to be loud and talk about that.
Yeah.
I've wondered a little bit, and the only bit that I've done out loud, I was kind of shot down quickly, but you know, I'm wondering, are there even the protests that we're being told about as we're being told about them?
Yeah.
You know, is there really such a big deal going on in individual places? Like I was talking in real life about this and mentioning my town of Bellingham, saying I haven't seen any protesting. And they said, oh, there has been, but yeah, it's been small and this and that, you know. And it's like, why would there even be protesting in Washington in the first place? Because we are not going to be affected by this at all.
Yeah, Oregon will have like abortion tourism or something, you know?
Yeah, right. It's only going to do well for our states.
Yeah.
If states nearby are going to ban it, which I don't know, man. I don't think that we're going to see one less abortion with anything that's happened. That's one thing that I think.
Yeah, if anything, it's like, it's the argument that they have in California for like a waiting period on a gun.
Yeah.
You know,
and it's and how many people
just got like a longer car ride to think it over.
Exactly. And it's, I don't know, it's how many less guns are there in California with that? Like, it doesn't actually affect the numbers at the end of the day, I don't believe.
Yeah.
Anybody who wants an abortion is still going to get one. I don't know. And then the screaming, like, bullshit of it all, that I see people literally saying that they've banned abortion.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, well, that didn't happen anywhere at all. Like, there wasn't a federal ban. They refer to it as a federal ban. Everyone talks about it wrong. People talk about how important Roe v. Wade is. And I'm sure you know as well as I do that that whole thing is like, it's filthy. It sucks. It stinks. It's not right. It's Jane Roe. She was a paid actor.
She didn't even have an abortion, right?
And she didn't even have an abortion. And she was, at one point, she was super proud at how well she did at this acting job. And at another point, she said it was the worst sin she ever committed. And
yeah,
these things were coming out almost as immediately as it happened, like before my time in this world. It was already known that that was bullshit.
Yeah, I watched the documentary about her, and it kind of just showed that she was just wheeled out at one point, multiple points by both sides to get their point across. And she was not a well woman. You know, she was a drug addict and alcoholic, and she was just kind of fed alcohol and drugs
and lines
and yeah. And just given financial aid to promote whichever side wanted at the time, you know?
Yeah. So I hate that that's the actual focal point, you know, that Roe v. Wade is what the conversation starts with. And I'm probably not even going to get to telling someone that that whole case is bullshit in the first place before they're already using other misinformation. I don't know what right word to use, but you know, they're saying things like the federal ban and this and that. I say, hey, anything's a win when states have more rights.
Yeah.
When we have a right to vote on it. I kind of want to throw it in the face of some of these people, like, well, wait, no, isn't this just a chance for democracy to work better? Isn't your sacred democracy going to prove that everyone's on the same page here?
Yeah.
Because I mean, that used to be one that I'd throw out years ago as I was really learning my libertarian ways that I had. You know, I would say if you believe in democracy, then why don't we just vote on abortion? You know, or no, I wouldn't say that. I'd say, how would you feel about your democracy if 51% of people voted to ban abortion? Would you still find it to be a great system, or would you call it bullshit at that moment?
Yeah.
You know,
I remember a long time ago, maybe during the elections, or like around the time that Trump won, there was like, I think he like pulled funding or something from Planned Parenthood at some point, or they lost out on some money.
Yeah, or there was maybe even just a threat. Yeah, it seems vaguely familiar.
Yeah, yeah. And Dave Smith was just like, you know, if you do the math, if every person who voted for Hillary Clinton gave $11, it would fund Planned Parenthood for like a really long time, like a year or something like that, you know?
Right.
It's just, but that's probably a racist way to think, because minorities don't have money.
Oh, you dick. They don't got 11 bucks.
Yeah.
You could have said 350. Then that would be more reasonable.
Or licenses or the internet. You know? So who knows?
What they need is white people to save them from all these things. That's what they need.
Yeah. Yeah. That I love listening to Ryan Dawson. He goes real hard. I don't agree with his 9/11 stuff. He'll say that there's video of a plane going into the Pentagon.
Uh-huh.
But there's not.
Yeah.
But like, he's pretty good on everything else, and his little bell that he rings when people have certain last names is pretty funny. And but he made the point on that show I was listening to today that like helping someone is like a backhanded compliment. Like, it's like an insult, you know? Like,
well, especially if the help's not asked for.
Yeah.
You know, if it's like with what we were saying, you know, like voter ID. Well, that's racist because they can't do this. We need to help them get ID before we can even suggest such a thing.
Yeah.
It's just like, huh, So you don't think they can get ID? Interesting.
Yeah. It's all it's the racism by lower expectations. So, well, our guest is here. One of our guests here. So.
Oh, we got two.
Yeah, Matt's supposed to come on too, but I don't know.
Oh, that'd be great.
I don't know if you guys have heard of Sean from Kill the Mockingbirds. That's where I heard about that from.
Yeah, yeah. It's like the idea is like listening to tones and frequencies that would make you feel like you're high on different drugs, depending on the frequencies, right?
Yeah, and actually have some sort of like actually like a real psychoactive effect. And I don't know if it would go as far as having like the detrimental effects on your body or your brain, you know, the brain cell stuff. I don't know if it goes that far, but right. It's a wild thing to think about.
Cause right away, I want to believe that that's possible because like, I listened to a lot of like really psychedelic music. Psychedelic's not quite the right word, but really weird, fuck with your brain kind of stuff that gets into like weird frequencies that can make at least me feel like I'm really high at times when I'm listening to it. Like when I got busted at one point and I had to be on probation, I was like, man, I don't need drugs.
Right.
I got the music. I can get high on this shit. And I had to have like a blow to go in my pickup to start my truck for a while. And I'd be like, man, good thing this thing can't hear what I'm listening to. Cause it would think I was all fucked up to be listening to this music. But one of the beauties of that is that I could feel like I'm high as shit, especially if I had headphones on and I'm listening to the right thing and like really grooving on it just right. But as soon as someone comes in the room and I take off my headphones, I'm straight as a whistle, you know, like I'm good to roll. I'm not like high all night or the next day or hungover or any of those things. So the idea that someone could be like scientifically tapping into different frequencies to make you feel like you're on different drugs, that's kind of an interesting idea, because it seems like that would become like totally legal. It'd be like a legal way to feel high. Like how could that, you know, there's no substance there. I don't know. It seems like something, because what was interesting when I heard you mention it on Master Debaters was you were saying it was like a black market thing.
And yeah. It sounded like it was on the dark web, a lot of it.
Yeah. Like why would that, like, how could like, cause I mean, what would this be, an MP3 file? You know, like how could that be illegal? I mean, maybe like in a copyright sense or whatever, but you know, like how could the effects, like, dude, you can't listen to this Pink Floyd album.
Yeah.
You're going to get too high.
Yeah. Like the Elvis stuff, it makes you start shaking your hips all weird.
Oh yeah. You're going to start fucking like crazy if you listen to Elvis.
Yeah.
You can't control your hips.
So I'm looking right now, just really quick on DuckDuckGo. I typed in binaural beats for drugs, and there's one that's supposed to simulate the feeling of like being on Vyvanse. One that's supposed to be like Adderall, one that's supposed to be like marijuana or just THC. Let's see what else they got.
That would be like drinking 14 Miller High Lifes.
I don't see any booze yet. I saw ketamine here, which is a really interesting one.
I'm a sober guy. I'm actually, I've almost got 10 years sober, guys.
Hey, congratulations.
Do you think it would be a relapse?
Well, it depends on how much you start listening to this stuff. Can you listen to it just once and then go about your life? Or are you going to become obsessed with how am I going to listen to my next beat, dude?
Yeah. How am I going to, I got to blow somebody to get another song.
Yeah. You start lying and cheating, lying to your wife and fucking like hiding. You're hiding.
Calling out of work.
Yeah. You got a special MP3 player that doesn't hook up to the internet. So you can put all these on there and hide it from your wife.
It's in the toilet tank or something like that.
That's awesome. No, dude, this ketamine one is really interesting though. It's 8 hours long. And the ketamine shit's weird, dude. Like with the whole idea of, I don't know if you guys heard the theory, and this is a big theory, and this isn't my theory. This is just something that I heard and I was looking into, that the Uvalde shooter was participating in like these ketamine clinics that they have all over Texas. Whoa. They're really all over the place, but in Texas there seems to be quite a few.
Those are for like depression, right?
Yeah,
it's for depression. Yeah, in low doses.
I think I've heard like Neil Brennan, the comedian, talk about doing that.
Okay. Well, have you also heard about like what happens when people take too much of it? Because it is, I mean,
is that the K-hole?
It's it's insane hallucinations that people have. I read through a Yale study on it. And yeah, I know Yale's a weird one, but they did a study on ketamine, and out of a bunch of really healthy people, they got down to three people that were fit to do the ketamine tests, and they had wild hallucinations. Like one girl, it was an intravenous ketamine, and one girl saw her arm disappear. One girl was taken back in time to a specific soccer game that she was watching, and she felt like a god there because she knew exactly what was going to go on, but she still felt the same emotion she felt when she was like watching the whole thing live.
It's like Biff when he went back in time in Back to the Future Part 2, and he had that sports almanac.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, dude. I mean, it's wild. So like the idea here with the shooters, the school shooters, is that this kid, you know, this Santos, whatever his name is, Salvador Ramos, goes to this alleged, you know, clinic in San Diego where his therapist was, you know, using this stuff on him along with Google Deep Dream.
Okay. Hey, quit talking about Jews like that, dude. Fucking Deborah's here.
I'm here.
Tone down the anti-Semitic talk, okay?
When did I mention Jews?
No, I'm just kidding.
guys, we just got it right into it. Our guest today is Ryan Dean from Dangerous World Podcast. We're really happy to have you here, dude. You're a wealth of knowledge on all things weird, and you have a strangely your take on it is always like to look into it more than just to blatantly believe everything like I probably do, like so many conspiracy theorists. And it's like, it's upsetting to hear sometimes, but it's really refreshing in the end because you actually like look into the things and study them, you know.
Well, thank you. That's very nice, honestly.
It was kind of a weird compliment, but
it's really, really kind to hear that, because it might sound like I don't believe in a lot of this stuff, but I'm starting to actually believe in lizard people, believe it or not. Like
is your hatred for David Icke lessening?
No, I don't hate anyone really, man. Like, but I do feel that people like David Icke are plants. I feel like a lot of people at high levels of this are plants, because everything gets infiltrated at some point. And I mean, there's even meme accounts that I think are like CIA ran, like Lad Bible, I think is one that has some ties to that.
I got into some real weird, I went down some, got into some real sticky meme stuff around the leading up to the 2020 election. I was just following meme pages, and then like all of a sudden they were flipping to like full on like white power meme pages. Yeah. And they hadn't started that way. I would like see it and be like, how did I start following this? And I'd go back and look and be like, oh, there's a normal like political meme, you know? And the next thing you know, it's like super racist.
Well, and that, did you, it's so funny you say that, man, because I watched this documentary that a buddy from Australia sent me yesterday, and it was about the Bored Ape Yacht Club being a massive racist dog whistle, and all these celebrities are participating in like anti-black stuff. It's wild. It was really well done. All the undertones of the Bored Apes are like neo-Nazi stuff, like the original logo. I'll see if I can pull up images.
What is it?
Yeah, I've never heard of the Bored Apes. What?
Oh, really? It's those monkeys that everyone was posting, the NFTs.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah, okay. That's the Bored Ape Yacht Club. If you see any of those big monkeys that were selling for like millions of dollars.
Yeah.
That's what it is. Created by some authors. I'll send you guys the documentary. It's on YouTube for some reason, which I'm skeptical of. And it just goes deep into how they used all this Nazi symbolism. And now it's all over the place. And there's a lot of black athletes and entertainers that unknowingly are promoting white supremacy through this NFT collection.
Can you explain what NFT is? I'm sorry, I'm late all of this.
Well, no one really knows what they are, including me. But what it is, it stands for non-fungible token. And essentially what it is, it's digital art. So if I create an image, and it can be as crappy as like modern day art, where it's literally just like a Jackson Pollock, just splatters all over the place. Or it can be something that's really well done. It can be a video. But it's a digital piece, a one of one, which you sell the exclusive rights for, To like, let's say I'm a seller, you're a purchaser. I would sell you this NFT for like 5 Ethereum, and Ethereum is a cryptocurrency. Okay. And then you own this image, and only you own it. Even though, you know, Adam and Chud can screenshot the same thing and say that they own it, it's like a flex in the digital world to say that you're the only owner of this thing. So it's all these people with disposable income. Once the cryptocurrency was rising so quickly, all these brand new millionaires and multimillionaires are like, what do I do with this money? Let's spend it on digital art is the idea.
And sometimes they come with like perks, Deborah. So you'll get into like a private party. If you have, like, if they say they release 60 of these NFTs, you have one of them, you would get to go do certain things, or like you'd get to like be first in line for a new pair of like sneakers or something like that. If it's from like,
exactly.
If you think about it, I've heard it explained in a way that doesn't make it sound as crazy as it is, because I mean, it's not that much different than paying millions and millions of dollars for an actual physical piece of art, but it's,
I see the difference because like I said, you can take a screenshot of it. You know what I mean? And I understand that there can be replicas in the real world. Like, I'm a decent painter. I paint just for fun sometimes. I could copy the Mona Lisa pretty accurately, probably, but it won't be the Mona Lisa. You know what I mean? So yeah, there's definitely similarities, but am I able to screen share, Adam?
Yeah, I'll set it up for you.
I'll show you what I saw about the Bored Ape Nazi connections here. It's just, it was interesting. And like, speaking of, you know, the you know, raffles and like, you know, the exclusive clubs and stuff, like the sneaker analogy you used, Bored Ape ran a little like a giveaway where it was $100,000 worth of NFTs and tokens and whatnot, and the puzzle was like Cicada 3301 almost. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but it's like this intricate puzzle where people are going all over the internet to solve this puzzle. Yeah. And it was wild.
That was kind of early 4chan Q stuff, right?
Yeah, exactly, dude. And it's the connections that they made and the way that they got to the final answer of this, like, you know, digital riddle, it had a bunch of flat out Hitler references and like SS and SA and all kinds of wild, wild stuff that it's like, wow. If they're not racist, this guy definitely did some good digging to make it look like they were racist. So just kind of interesting.
Weird. How did we get there?
Bored gorilla. That's the
Bored Ape.
Bored Ape.
Yeah. I'm trying to find the original logo here because it is, it's basically, so I'll just show you what I have here. And then you'll see the, I'll try and find some better stuff, but these are them right here. So, you know, like I said, you can just click on this and you can screenshot that and then you can say that you own it, but I don't know. You never really do.
Yeah, this, but what is it that someone would own that would be more so owning it, like a JPEG file instead of a screen? I mean, like, I have a hard time seeing the difference. I mean, like, I understand the difference between the Mona Lisa and someone repainting the Mona Lisa, and I understand, like, you know, that it's obtained differently. But like, if someone makes a meme and makes a digital meme and puts it on the internet, I don't think that original file is more valuable than my screenshot of that I save into my file. Like, maybe I don't understand the nuances to, you know, digital photography or digital files or whatever.
Yeah. So I think, like, it'd be like the metadata, you know what I mean? Like, if you own the metadata to the image, I think that, I don't know. Your
the metadata guess is meaning like the layers that they use to create it or something.
Like the coding that's inside the picture, yeah, okay. and all that, like, in order to pull the image up. I know that in Cicada 3301, a lot of the puzzle pieces were found inside metadata within images. But this was one thing that I found, and what one thing that they show on that documentary, the one over here on the left is the, like, most generic logo, official logo of Bored Ape Yacht Club. And then you have like the Waffen logos of the Nazis, you know what I mean? It's the same thing. And they go as far as saying that there's 18 teeth within this ape, and 18 is AH or Adolf Hitler, right? And then, I mean, it goes deep, dude. I recommend this freaking documentary on YouTube.
Yeah, we'll check it out.
Yeah, man. But that's just funny that you brought that up, because I was actually watching a video on that last night.
Yeah. Pepe started out as just like a comic book, right?
Yeah. And then that was
just
a reference.
He was like some sort of slacker stoner character. And then that got twisted into the alt-right and all that stuff.
Yeah, they actually talk about him a little bit in that documentary, where, you know, a lot of the weird cult around that comes from World of Warcraft, believe it or not. Weird. And the Kek, K-E-K.
Yeah, Kekistan. I guess,
what's that?
Kekistan.
Yeah, that. And then also there's an Egyptian god that goes by Kek, and he's the god of chaos. And that's why they said, like, you know, they tied it to Trump, and they said he was a chaos magician and all these other things. And I guess Kek is also kind of like LOL in Korean, basically. So
okay. They
tied a lot of weird stuff together, man. And it's just one of those things where it's kind of mind blowing if you're just sitting there with an open mind and watch it.
What was the name of this again? The doc?
I can find it right now. It's you could probably just go to YouTube and type in Bored Ape Nazi, okay. Which is
that probably would be not enough to bring it in.
Yeah, it's probably not good for your search results on your web browser, but it'll definitely pull it up for you. Let's see.
Yeah, I'm not too worried about that. Mine doesn't look good from the get-go.
Right? Okay. Yeah, it's just Bored Ape Nazi Club.
Check it out.
Yeah, it's really well done. It sounds goofy, but then, and like, even when the dude sent it to me, I was like, all right, I'll watch it. And I was like hooked within 30 seconds of the thing, dude. It's great. But
so you just said that you're starting to actually believe in lizard people. On what level are you committed? Because I know, level? You know, we've heard, you know, like David Icke thinks there's actual shapeshifters. I'm not opposed to it. We've heard Billy Corgan talk about it as well. You've seen them. And then we've also had what we wanted to have you on with Deborah to talk about a little bit. We had Princess Di talk about it too, right?
Yeah, I actually.
How'd you like that for a segue? That was pretty good.
That was great. You're a professional, dude.
Yeah.
I actually episodes. I have three statements from Arizona Wilder on like accounts of the Queen Mother, the Queen, and Prince Charles regarding the shape shifting lizard stuff that I can read off for you. But as far as how committed I am, on a scale of 1 to 10, I'm like a 6 or a 7.
Yeah, because, you know, we've heard people explain it like, oh, they're not actually lizard people, but it's like the lizard part of your brain and they just have more of it. They're cold-blooded psychos, and that's why they can operate business in this way.
That's where I'm personally at. If I ever say, if anyone ever hears me saying lizard people, I don't specifically believe there are people who are lizards who shapeshift. But I do think, you know, it's the predator class is the phrase I use most commonly. It's that group of people who control the people that everyone, that the conspiracy theorists think there are certain people who control things. But I think that there's an unseen group that are controlling those people. And those would be the lizard people or the predator class or the ones that they're the ones that follow some sort of, I want to say, demonic, religious, symbolic bullshit that I don't understand, but I have in the last few years come to see it in all kinds of high places.
What do you think, Deborah?
Well, you know, Ryan explaining lizard brain rather than, you know, turning into a physical lizard, that makes sense. But you're also talking about shape-shifting.
Chud or myself?
I thought you were talking to were the one who mentioned shapeshifters.
Well, yeah, I definitely agree with what Chud is saying for sure. I mean, yeah, the shapeshifting is what I'm a little bit iffy on, because I think that could be like cast onto someone's like memory of the way that something went down. I mean, these people have been using a lot of drugs, LSD and ketamine, have been a part of like the MK Ultra stuff for a long time. And there is one account from Arizona Wilder in regard to Princess Diana, where she says she was like pumped full of drugs. And then she started seeing all of the royals around her turn into reptilians and then eat people that were around her. So that's
a thing. They saw them eat babies or something.
Yeah. So that's the thing. When you're on LSD or you're on ketamine, that's a good way for something crazy to actually go down in the real world here, or for your brain to tell yourself that you're seeing something go down like that. You know what I mean? And then you can go to your doctor or go to your friend and they'll be like, well, yeah, dude, you're on LSD. You know what I mean? I don't know if someone has had that kind of vivid hallucination by, you know, being on those kinds of drugs. I've never done them, but from what I hear, they're a good time.
Have you ever watched Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas?
Yes, and they reference that really well
in there. They have lizard people in there, and they also have adrenochrome.
Yeah, that's a good red pill movie, dude, for sure.
Yeah, and then you find out about Hunter S. Thompson, that he's possibly at Bohemian Grove doing snuff films with Paul Benassi.
Oh, man, I didn't even know that, honestly.
That's a bummer, huh?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a huge fan, I think, but yeah, dude, he is a very talented writer for sure. That's wild. Paul Benassi is the guy from Who Took Johnny, too, right?
Franklin, he's like the main Franklin scandal kid who was like he was highly MK Ultra possible, you know, assassin. And then he was also used to like kidnap children. He said he raped Johnny Gosch when they first got him. Yeah. He said they made him do it. You know, he was like that guy.
And he went and visited
that basement in Colorado. Yeah. Johnny Gosch.
Noreen.
Yeah. Noreen Gosch. Johnny Gosch said, they said Johnny Gosch came back and talked to her.
Yeah. When he was an adult, man, he's the only pedophile that I actually feel some sympathy for. I feel like, man,
we've talked about that before on the show.
Yeah. Very sad, dude. But who knows, man? There's probably a lot of those people out there. And then it kind of makes you wonder about like these weirdos like Hunter Biden and things like that. It's like, what happened to those people when they were kids, man? Yeah. Or Joe Biden, for that matter. I really don't like Joe Biden at all. But what happened to them when they were kids to put them in these situations? And I'm not sympathetic to pedophiles, dude. I think they could all be thrown off a cliff. But it's a tragic situation that gets those people there, I feel, more often than not. So,
yeah.
SRA stuff.
Exactly. We've
been talking about on this show quite a bit lately. Yeah, it's like, you know, when it comes to like, I think that I would just imagine that a lot of pedophiles were abused themselves as kids. And at one point, they're a victim, and it's terrible, and it's so sad. But at another point, that switches. Oh, I'm seeing them now. But at another point, they become in control of themselves. And they're the ones who are the victimizers, not the victims. And, I can't have sympathy for that. But it's when is that line crossed, you know, like, because I bet with a lot of these people, as they're abused, if they're abused young, if we're talking like Adam and I and Deborah have been talking to people about satanic ritual abuse people who are gotten when they're very, very, very young, like even infancy. Mm-hmm. I have a hard time imagining that infant that lives a life of abuse, they're not abusing younger than them when they're, you know, 10 and 14 years old. By that time, they're a bad person too. When they're an adult, if they've been abused and they've been abusing other people their whole life, they have no sympathy from me.
Well, it's like the bully at school when you're a kid. You know, that bully at school on a smaller scale probably is abused by his parents or feels neglect in some way, more often than not, right? But usually they just need a freaking hug. But
the bully's dad is almost always a bully to the kid.
Exactly. You know? Exactly. Back to the reptilian thing, man. You know, the reason what really kind of got me there recently was the I don't know if you guys are familiar with the idea of like Maitreya and the United Nations.
No.
So it was a really interesting thing that me and a buddy, Shannon, who's hopefully going to start a podcast soon, we were looking into this idea that the United Nations worships the fifth Buddha, the fifth and final Buddha, kind of like this Antichrist figure, and his name is Maitreya. And when you look him up, they call him the Cosmic Christ. They call him the Coming One. They call him all these weird things that allude to the Antichrist. And what's interesting is on June 14th, it was, they had World Invocation Day. And on the United Nations website, it would actually bring you to the Lucius Trust website. And they have a prayer that they wanted everyone in the world to say to bring the coming one. They call this guy the coming one. And they say that when the coming one returns, he's going to bring with him the spirits of all of the all the spirits that are behind the world powers, the religious leaders, and all of the higher ups in society. And this is the UN saying this. This isn't world, like
it's like them making a one world religion, right?
Absolutely. And it ties into like what Albert Pike was saying, how they want to they basically look at the atheists and the Christians the same. They want to break them so hard. They want to divide them first, and then they want to break them so hard that they all become nihilists. And then once they're nihilists, they can put someone at the world stage, at the front of the world stage, and everyone will want to just follow something at that point, right? Which is interesting. Project Bluebeam kind of comes into play here a little bit. And yeah, man, it's just that. So that's what made me think a little bit about this whole lizard person thing, is that the United Nations says that this Maitreya is going to bring the spirits that are behind all of these world powers, and we're going to see them one day. And, you know, is that me, that noise?
No, that's my dog. My dog is moaning and groaning.
I was freaking out for a second. I was like, hopefully it's not coming from me. I'm talking about Maitreya over here, and then maybe he's coming.
Coming from under the chair.
Sorry about that.
No, you're good. I love dogs.
It's a Gozer.
Gozer, like from Ghostbusters?
Yeah.
Dope.
My dog? My dog?
I'm just joking around.
I don't know what Gozer is.
Oh, it's a monster from Ghostbusters.
Zool.
Well, he is a monster, so that's accurate. So Gozer, are you saying
Gozer,
that
Gozer was huge in Samaria?
Are you saying that the United Nations is in on all of this?
They're the ones that are actually leading the charge for sure. And you can see this on their site. They have a meditation room there at the United Nations. I don't know if you're familiar with their meditation room.
No.
Had you guys seen this, Adam or Chud? You guys
meditation seen this room at the UN?
Yeah. No. Well, let me pull this up because this is wild stuff.
Yeah.
So
where is the UN?
This meditation room's in New York.
Okay.
And supposedly it used to be at 666 Park Avenue or something. And now it's at 866 United Nations Boulevard. But
is this have anything to do with what Bloomberg? Bloomberg bought some old like Egyptian temple or something like that.
A Mithras temple?
Yeah, something like that.
And took all the bricks and rebuilt it someplace else?
Yeah.
Like I remember Tracy Twyman talking about some of this, but that was a long time ago.
Yeah.
I think that was in London.
Okay. But was it Bloomberg though, right?
Yeah.
So this
that's
is
who,
the UN...
that's who Deborah wanted to be, thought was going to be the
oh
she,
yeah,
she wanted him
Bloomberg
to be...
supporter.
Mm-hmm. Early on, very early.
Oh
on.
No way! That's so funny. I mean, hey, you know, I was a Trump supporter. You know what I mean? Like everyone kind of changes their opinions on these people.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, this is the UN meditation room right here. And I don't know about you guys. What is this?
I'm
this
seeing a black
altar.
Cube.
I'm seeing an altar.
It's a black cube, Deborah.
Yeah, what's the black. Well, it is an altar, but it's definitely the black cube. Yeah.
And what's please explain what a black cube is.
Do you want to do it, Adam or Chud?
Well, black cube, amongst other things, like a black cube can unfold into a cross. And it tends to be associated with Saturn and Saturn worship, the black cube of Saturn. And the whole thing's connected to a big death cult that, as I was mentioning earlier, when I was saying the predator class, and they seem to use symbols that I don't necessarily understand, but I see more and more as I pay closer attention, black cube is one of them. And I can't tell you, maybe one of these guys have a better explanation for this, but, you know, that black cube does seem to be associated with a lot of crazy stuff. What do we get when we just pull up black cube?
Sure.
This is the huge thing right here. And a lot of people, you know, they call this the Star of David. The Freemasons call it the Seal of Solomon. And you get two triangles represented here. The mm-hmm. the one pointing up represents like light, masculine energy. The one pointing up represents darkness, feminine energy, the earth. And then the one pointing down represents light, divinity and masculine energy and all that good stuff. But when you get them overlapping here, you get a hexagon, and the hexagon is like what, you know, kind of alludes to like the hex, you know, hexing someone, putting a curse on them. And this is like one of the oldest symbols. This and the yin yang, I've come to find out, are one of the oldest symbols when it comes to witchcraft. And you have in the middle of this, you have a cube, a black cube. So it's symbolism that's difficult to really kind of like fall into right away. But then when you start, like, try and notice when you see hexagons in powerful places. The stock exchange has hexagons all over the place in New York. These are black cubes all over the world. Mecca is a black cube.
Yeah, Mecca's the black cube.
Yeah, so it's just an interesting thing. It we already kind of have this one world religion hidden within a lot of our big religions. But yeah, so you see those, and then you see this one here, and this is in their meditation room, and this is where they meditate to try to channel Maitreya and these spirits that are supposedly, you know, going to come with them. So that's what's gotten me a little closer to believing in reptilians. You know what I mean? These people clearly do. They believe in spirits that are guiding them to rule the world the way they see fit. And it doesn't seem like it's good for anyone really, except for themselves. And so it makes you think, you know, they're not exactly human.
I wonder who the head spiritual person is at the UN.
Well, so the one that runs the Lucius Trust is they say it's a different lady, but I believe that it's Mary Bailey. It's Alice Bailey's daughter. And Alice Bailey's a really interesting individual too. You guys familiar with her and Helena Blavatsky?
Helena Blavatsky, yes, but not this
crazy lady. Mm-mm. So she is she learned a ton and very, very inspired by Helena Blavatsky. Helena Blavatsky, by the way, the first first Russian female to get U.S. citizenship. So that's kind of interesting. And she started this whole Lucius Trust, initially called Lucifer Publishing. And it's funny how they address this here on the official Lucius Trust website. But Lucius Trust, again, Lucifer Publishing, was originally started to get out theology literature. And now it's shifted over to, you know, dispensing United Nations literature. So they're pushing theology through the United Nations. And they have these goals of trying to, you know, get parents away from their kids as much as possible. Break up the nuclear family and all these things. It's a 10-point plan that they have, which this this Robert Mueller talks about. And it's not the same Robert Mueller from the Trump stuff. He is a really weird sort of a doctor, you know, educated, not a MD, but like a, you know, Dr. Robert Mueller. And he's all about breaking up the family and all about theology. And for some reason, a lot of these high up people in society are like theologists, which is that Helena Blavatsky stuff.
And she's kind of the grandmother of the New Age, right?
Alice Bailey?
Or Blavatsky, which one?
I mean, they both are, really. You know what I mean? Alice Bailey, she's the one that came up with that little statement with love and light. You'll hear a lot of celebrities say that at the end of their speeches. Will Smith actually said that, I think the same night that he slapped Chris Rock, I'm not mistaken.
I think you're right.
Yeah. And so with love and light, light is Lucifer to them. You know what I mean? And
Will Smith is also, he's obsessed with The Alchemist.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if he's a Freemason. He's definitely a Scientologist. They had a little weird school. We did a fun episode on him. This is their prayer to Maitreya, I believe, who they think is the Antichrist. I wouldn't read the whole thing in full. I haven't, to be honest. I think that you invoke something within you if you read that. But this is connected to the United Nations through World Goodwill, which is one of the schools. They have the Arcane School, Triangles, and then World Goodwill. These are their three institutions. And the Great Invocation is right here. And it talks about just this whole video. I can play the, well, actually I can't play the video, but the video is wild where they're just sitting there talking about, you know, the coming one's going to return and it's going to make the world a perfect place and all this weird stuff. It's just, it sounds good on the surface, but it's all BS.
What is the Lucis Trust's relationship with the UN, like on surface level, like on out in the public?
So they produce all of their literature. Cause okay. Like I was saying, and I know I'm kind of all over the place here cause it's a ton of information, but yeah. the Lucifer Trust was started to put out theology related materials. Alice Bailey, the founder, was abused as a child, right? Which we were just talking about, and then tried to kill herself, but she had a hallucination and saw this Koot Humi come into her room, which is like a Hindu version of, or I believe a Buddhist version of Jesus, basically. This Koot Humi or Koot Humi says, you know, don't kill yourself. You got a long life ahead of you. You have a mission that you need to get all of this work out to, you know, the masses. And she ends up following Helena Blavatsky, becomes obsessed with theology. And then later she's walking through the hills in the theology wing in Hollywood, believe it or not.
There's theology or theosophy?
I'm sorry, theosophy. Am I even saying theology the whole time?
Yeah, no big deal.
Theosophy. Yeah, well, I'm glad that you're here to catch me with that. Yeah, theosophy. So this is like the idea of, like, you know, the his hidden knowledge. She takes all these religions from all over the world and blends them together, basically. And that's kind of the basis for a one world religion there. But she's walking through the hills in Hollywood when she is officially a theosophist, and then sees another guy that becomes known as the Tibetan. And the Tibetan, it was a hallucination on her end, and they communicate telepathically, and she writes 19 books, I want to say. And these are all the original Lucifer Trust. But once they started getting involved with the UN, they had to change their name because having something called the Lucifer Trust produce your material is not a good look. And so then they call it the Lucius Trust now. And it's still the same people behind it, still the same family. And now they're promoting all this stuff here. So I'm trying to find where they address the Lucifer Trust thing.
And where was the bridge between them and the UN? How did it come about?
So her husband, I believe his name's Foster, was a UN bigwig, basically. And he was also a secretary at one of these theosophy temples. The one that was actually in Hollywood. He was basically the secretary there. And then, so she gets involved. He's also working with the UN at the time. And basically it was through Foster Bailey here.
Would the Rosicrucians be a theosophy organization?
Yeah, it definitely seems so. They're like Christian mystics. Yeah. So yeah, definitely. So yeah, this is Alice Bailey, and yeah, her husband Foster was the one that really got them involved with the UN. So
she's a looker.
Yeah. And she got so annoyed with Christianity because she was dating, I think it was an Episcopalian or something preacher that beat her all the time, you know, threw her downstairs, just horrible stuff, you know. And so she wanted to get as far away from Christianity as she could and started worshiping the devil, I guess.
Which makes sense. Yeah.
I guess. I mean, I don't know.
In the opposite direction.
Yeah, it's crazy. But yeah, let's see if I can find this. Because it's interesting how they, yeah. So this is, again, this is her thing. One of the big questions here was, who is Alice Bailey? But yeah, I'm trying to. It's hard to talk and look at stuff at the same time. I can only do one thing at a time here. Sorry.
Can we join the Lucis Trust?
You could probably try. You could definitely get in triangles.
Well, to click on that one at the bottom, go back and click on the, can I join the Lucis Trust?
Oh, okay.
it's not
a membership organization. You can apply to become a student of the Arcane School, a distance learning correspondence school.
Triangles is the interesting one to me because it's where basically three people, you meet two other people online and that forms a triangle, and then you talk about
that never turns out good.
Yeah, if it's you and then two other people, those two other people are in the FBI more often than not. So it's just but
next thing they know, you're polyamorous with two FBI agents. You know?
Exactly. So yeah, they freaking, you know, they really stress about doing like yoga during full moons and trying to channel the energy of the moon, which ties into the royals, believe it or not, with Princess Diana. And we can get into that later, I'm sure. But yeah, it's just it's a rabbit hole that I was going down and just seeing all these connections. And then that brought me to the five suns and all these other weird, weird things that are like hidden history and hidden knowledge, it seems. But then, you know, these people really talk about it like in your face if you just look for it. And this is an official website, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's all wide out, right? Wide open in the public eye.
It's very interesting.
Yeah, that five suns stuff is pretty interesting to me. Again, I heard you talking about that on Master Debaters. And man, that fits right in with a lot of things that I think, just with like I think that time is in a cycle of some sort or another, and that ancient history could go back so much farther. I mean, you were talking about the idea of it being us being on our fifth sun at this point in time.
That was crazy.
It's pretty awesome. Like, cause like I'm like really into Graham Hancock and, you know, the whole idea of that ancient Egypt was fairly modern in our human history, and that they all inherited, like, I think the Sphinx and the pyramid, I think those came from a previous generation. Like as Graham Hancock puts it, and I quote on here all the time, that we're a species with amnesia and that there was something before that. And I'm so open to that there was like a different sun before that time, and that we lived in a different era. And as I go farther and farther into these ancient ideas, the more I could believe that was the same back then as it was in Egypt, and that they were inheriting something from before, and that we could get like Michael Cremo. You ever look into his stuff? Yeah. Like, he believes that the human history goes back millions of years. Like, it's like where if you're talking to anyone who believes in academics at all, they laugh at your idea of, you know, human culture going back millions of years. But I think it could be. I mean, I think that we could have built and rebuilt, gotten technically advanced, and there we go. There's Michael Cremo's book.
Have you tried to get into this book yet, Chud? Dude, look how thick this motherfucker is.
How many pictures are in it? If there's enough pictures, I might pick it up.
Dude, there's not very many pictures.
Dude, that's the thing. With a book like that, you got to have cool pictures in there, man. Like, I'm not even kidding. I've been looking into this.
There's like idea. 100 pages of like just tables. And like Monica Perez sent me this book.
Oh, nice.
She's talked to him before. I think I've listened to him talk on a handful of podcasts. He's really old. So, you know, you got to turn up the volume real loud and kind of lean in and listen when you're listening to him talk. But yeah, he doesn't mind going against everything that he was taught. You know, he's an academic himself. You know, he's allowed to go to huge archaeology conventions and stuff. I've heard him saying he doesn't do it anymore because they all just laugh at him so much. But yeah, he believes pretty strongly that we go, that there are more, the farther back you go, the more you're going to find. And that's all there is to it.
Yeah, man. The idea of those five suns is cool too, because they don't talk about a moon until the fifth sun was created. Excuse me. Which is,
yeah, there's a lot of cultures talk about the time before the moon.
Yeah.
Like, I think our moon, I'm pretty open to that. The moon is much more recent than, you know, Neil deGrasse Tyson's telling people or whatever.
How dare you? What's that book, Who Built the Moon, about? Have you read that one?
I've never read it.
You know, I've heard
a few people talk about it though. I hear it's just full of facts. It's all facts, and it, you know, it'll tell you like all these things that make the moon not make any sense, like the distance that it is from the earth and the distance the earth is from the sun, and then lining up to be the same size, for instance, it's like astronomically impossible that like eclipses work the way they do, with the moon being this size while the sun is huge, and but the sun is just exactly far enough away and the moon's exactly far enough away from us at just the right size that they line up to be identically the same size, allowing us to have eclipses the way we do. They talk about the craters on it. Like, we study craters here that we say came from comets and asteroids and things like that hitting. And we have a way that we can say, yeah, if it's this wide, then it should be this deep because it means this impact was like this and like that. Well, they have them all over the moon. And no matter what the width of them are, they're all the same depth. Mm. None of them go deeper than other ones. There aren't big ones and small ones. There's just wider ones and smaller ones. And that could lead to a lot of like hollow moon theories, that there's some kind of shell under there. I believe that the book, again, I haven't read this. I've just heard a handful of people talk about it at different times. They talk about during the moon landing, if you believe that happened.
Yeah, I know the story.
When they touched down, it rang like a bell.
For like hours or something.
Yeah, they had to pause. Yeah. They paused the mission because they couldn't work because there was all this noise coming from having touched down. Just all kinds of stuff like that. I've heard a handful of people talk about it, and no one has read that book and come away going, "Yeah, the moon is what I learned when I was in school."
Yeah, dude, the moon is wild to think about too, because it's like the only celestial body that we always see the same face of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, there's another one. It's tidally locked, right? Yeah. Which means that as it spins, you know, if you're going down like a flat Earth rabbit hole, and you're like at the beginning stages of that, you might type in something like, "Does the moon spin?" And what you'll find is the answer is, yeah, of course it does, because we always see the same face. So that means that every 28 days, it's making one round. It's spinning. It's just spinning real slow compared to us, but it's tidally locked. So we only ever see one side of that. No one has ever looked up and seen anything other than the same
the back side. Of the moon, right?
Yeah.
The dark side.
Right. Well, yeah, the dark side wouldn't necessarily, according to, you know, science or whatever, the dark side isn't dark because it's a sphere that's out there that's, you know, when we have a new moon as it was yesterday, like we couldn't see the moon at all. That means the dark side, the other side, should have been the fully lit side yesterday.
Mm.
And then when we see a full moon, that would mean the other side that we don't see would be dark at that time.
Yeah, man, it's cool when you kind of look into like all kinds of different stuff. I actually just looked into something yesterday when it comes to like global surveillance and this technology that's used in that. And they're called radomes. And they're those huge balls. Like if you think of Epcot Center, how it has that huge spheric structure. And they use these at like top secret military bases too. And this is provable. And there's giant satellites inside of those. And they do those big domes or the spheres around them so that any like satellite that is looking at that can't tell which direction the satellite's pointing to. And it's basically a ball covering the satellite. So the moon could even be something like that, as crazy as that sounds. You know what I mean?
It doesn't sound crazy at all.
Did you guys see Moonfall yet?
Yes.
What'd you think? Pretty great. Pretty wild.
It was great. It was fun.
What's the premises?
So it's this movie about the moon. There's this pseudo science. This guy's a janitor, and he's like he's a hollow moon theorist, right, Chud?
Yeah.
And he's like sneaking into all these aerospace centers, like posing as a janitor and like stealing all their info. His fringe conspiracy theory group with all the wackos at it, and he finds that the orbit of the moon is getting out of alignment with the Earth, right? And it's getting closer and closer, and get the band back together, get the old NASA astronauts back together to like go up and Armageddon style save the world, pretty much, right, Chud? Is that a good
that sounds about right. Yep.
It touches on like a bunch of conspiracy theories without even really getting into it, but it's like the moon is like a Death Star created by AI, and it's pretty entertaining. It's worth watching.
I was more stoked about it before I saw it than after I did. I just heard about the premise. I was like, oh, it's touching on all these like the moon's fake ideas and stuff like that. And then, yeah, just from my warped perspective, you know, it was just another Hollywood sci-fi,
yeah,
you know, and flick or whatever.
You know, it's like Armageddon. It's got car chases in it, and then it's got like Day After Tomorrow, natural disasters in it. Mm-hmm. So it touches on a bunch of, you know.
It's not bad though. I recommend it.
It's what it's called Moonfall.
Moonfall.
What? Yeah. When was it released?
2022. It's got Halle Berry in it.
Oh,
that can't be that bad then.
Yeah.
You know, there. Since we're talking about movies, I will take this one chance. I always recommend this movie to any conspiracy theorist out there. Metropia. Check out Metropia. Absolutely, 100%. Check it out.
Where is that from?
I believe 2012, 2018, somewhere in that era. Not as late as 18, but it's a fairly new movie. But it's like a really realistic looking animation, but it's so well done. And just the premises is the idea of it is basically you have you know, this dude, and he feels paranoid constantly, and he sees an ad you know, on the subway or wherever, you know, on his phone or anything. And he feels like the ad's talking to him, trying to tell him to buy the soap or, you know, do whatever with whatever's going on. And he ends up finding out that the shampoo that he's using, and this isn't a spoiler, it's in the plot, you know, the shampoo he's using has nanotechnology in it that is infiltrating his brain. And then there's someone in a tower talking to him, and anyone using this shampoo that tells the guy to participate in society. It's a weird, weird thing, man. So it's like whenever you get that urge, like when you get caught up in like a marketing campaign or something, it kind of ties into that. But then he starts unraveling this huge conspiracy that's around it, and the elite are behind it, of course, and all this great stuff. But it's just so well done. The visuals are cool. It's like really good dystopian future movie. It's good. One of my favorites.
What is it, like Japanimation kind of?
That sounds great.
It's phenomenal, dude. No, it's not anime. It's like it looks realistic. Just the people have kind of bigger heads. It's weird. It's just like, it's really visually pleasing, especially like, you know, in the evening or something when you're like winding down and you kind of watch it. It's like dark and it's just good. I'll see if, I mean, there's images all over the place of it, but it's I've never seen animation like it though. It looks really realistic, but fake at the same time.
Nice. So you guys mind if I totally derail for one sec? We can get back onto important things in a moment, but anybody see the new animated sci-fi movie that's like now my favorite movie of all time? Beavis and Butthead Do the Universe?
No.
Oh, God.
Is it good? My God. It's fucking amazing.
Where did you stream it at?
Paramount Plus.
Oh, wow.
Okay, so you have to have Paramount Plus to get it?
Yeah, I'm sure you could get it if you got Kodi or anything like that, too. But it's the plot, the without any spoilers... The plot is that they wind up going through a wormhole and from 1998, and Beavis and Butthead pop out in 2022. And they they're so stupid. They can't tell that they've changed. Like, they're just like, whoa, check out this little TV. They're looking at like a phone and stuff. Yeah. They have no clue. So they are navigating through a world where they don't know about the Me Too movement. They don't know what has happened in the world since 1998. I'll just say this, the part where they wander into a college and they have explained to them what white privilege is.
Yeah, they played that on OBDM.
Yeah, they played that little clip there. Yes. They have it explained to them that they have white privilege and what white privilege is. And Beavis and Butthead are so stoked because they didn't know they had all these privileges and now they do.
And then they go through life probably and realize that all that is fake,
you know. Oh, it's it's shallow in some ways, but there's some really deep social commentary in this movie. I'll say that it's really doing a careful examination of how Beavis and Butthead came from 98, which I think most
they
of
came
us
from, they came from like 92.
Well, that's, yeah, like, but
they were on liquid TV before they had their own show.
So they were coming from a time though where we, if we were talking right, like as our minds are now back then, we'd be going, holy shit, look at this PC world that we live in. Everything is so PC everywhere. but then they get jumped ahead to 2022, and it's like unfathomable how PC the world is that we live in today to these fucking dumb shits.
remember PCU with Jeremy Piven?
Oh yeah. Yeah, that was around that time. That was probably like what, 95, 96?
Yeah, something in there.
You ever see that, Ryan?
No, I hadn't. The first time that I'd ever heard
university.
The first time that I heard of PC was from South Park, and it was like a pretty late in the game. Like I didn't really understand what PC was. And PC even principal. In that, when they were, what's that?
Was it the PC principal?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And so, I mean, that was not very long ago at all. So I was probably not PC for a while, for a few years, while everyone was kind of transitioning.
PC was a big term in the 90s.
Yeah. Like, it was the original calling somebody woke.
Okay.
Yeah, it would. People would be complaining all the time about, like, oh, you know, movies aren't good anymore because everyone's too politically correct. We're all too PC. We're not. It's not like the good old days in the 70s where a comedy could just be a comedy. Now it's all PC. Of course, now we look back at that stuff that was happening then, and we're like, whoa, we could never get away with this now.
Dude, I watched Deuce Bigalow, Male Gigolo the other day. I am surprised that that was even a movie at that time. You know what I mean?
I was surprised it was a movie at that time.
It's good though, dude. If you go back and watch it, it's funny. Like it's not like an intelligent comedy, I'm sure you know, but it's just, it's like, damn, how'd they get away with that? You know what I mean?
But what did they make that for? Was that made for adults or children or what?
It was definitely adults for sure, but I don't know what group, because I mean it is a notoriously BS movie. It's not good, but just it's refreshing now when you see how movies are done to go back and watch something that we considered trash back then. Like you'll probably actually kind of enjoy it now. You know what I mean? Because it's just it's different. If that was made today, people would be all over it. You know what I mean? But instead they're remaking like the Avengers 70,000 times. And then they're doing all these other things that, you know, the Ghostbusters remake, all these new movies that are just recycled themes. It sucks. They should remake some of these like really politically incorrect movies, I think, but we can help.
Revenge of the Nerds.
Oh God, that'll never fly today. Didn't they do like a rape scene in that?
Well, the whole thing is based on sneaking and then peeping on the girls and stuff like that.
It's there was a borderline rape in it as well.
There'd be remade like where like chicks are spying on the guys or something, you know what I mean?
Yeah, like Porky's, like they're looking at guys' dongs through the, or it's like gay guys looking at other dudes through the in the sauna. Exactly. With their mouths.
Yeah, no, I don't know, man. It is funny to think about how much culture's changed, dude. It's sad.
Yeah.
Great examination is watching the stupid new Beavis and Butthead movie.
I'll have to check it out for sure.
It's totally worth it on that level alone. But then if you also like, you know, jokes about scoring and things like that, then it's hilarious as well. Yeah, that's the real spoiler alert. If you really want to know what the plot is. So they're trying to score. Okay. The whole movie is they're trying to score, but this time they're really going to do it. Pretty sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Beavis and MTV had a sketch cartoon show, like a cartoon short show. Like it was 30 minutes long.
Liquid television.
Yeah. And it had like Aeon Flux in it and Beavis and Butthead was in it. And that's the one where they played like frog baseball and stuff like that and did like the stuff that they couldn't even get away with on the later series, you know.
Going to Mexico and getting fireworks and
stuff. Yeah, blowing up, putting them up frogs' asses. Yeah. Like, but that's the kind of stuff I was watching as a young boy in my preteen years, you know.
Look how he turned out. He turned out fine.
Mike Judge that made Beavis and Butthead. Like I feel like he's always had his pulse on the social situation. If you look at like what he did with Beavis and Butthead back then, what he did with King of the Hill. There was, I'm not saying everything that ever happened on King of the Hill or Beavis and Butthead were like genius, but if you watch them, you like see these like the social commentary that's freaking amazing.
He made that
documentary that everyone in our circle watches now, Idiocracy. Like that movie is have you seen that, Ryan?
You call it a documentary.
Yeah.
It's, dude, if you go, that's another one. Go and watch that one. And it's like not funny anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's too real. Putting Gatorade on the crops.
He even did a short lived cartoon called The Good Family, where it was the opposite of King of the Hill. It was a liberal family and them living in modern times and just like them all trying to it's before the term woke, but everyone on that show is woke and they're trying to signal to everyone else how they're more woke than everyone else. And it's like, I don't know. I think that guy has always had his finger on the pulse.
He did Silicon Valley too, which was
Silicon Valley also did it.
Pretty good.
And even that movie Extract that he did like hit on some great things. And now we're all the way up to him doing more Beavis and Butthead. And I was skeptical going into it because I've loved Beavis and Butthead since it was new. And I thought that maybe it would be dumbed down in PC, but it's just as good a commentary as it ever was.
That's awesome.
At least someone's doing it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you want me to get back to this Lucius Trust stuff? I know we got into some fun stuff there, but I found the thing and I know that I had it kind of pulled up for you guys. I don't know if you happen to read it.
Yeah, let's get real again.
I know. Yeah, we had to break it up with a little bit of fun.
A little comedy.
But so from the official site, and this is what I had this pulled up, the esoteric meaning of Lucifer. And they say here on luciustrust.org, says there are comments on the World Wide Web claiming that Lucius Trust was once called the Lucifer Trust. Such was never the case. However, for a brief period of 2 or 3 years in the early 1920s, when Alice and Foster Bailey were beginning to publish the books published under her name, they named their fledgling publishing company Lucifer Publishing Company. So they say that it's not true. But then, like,
they tell you that it is.
They say for 2 to 3 years in the early 1920s, they did have this company called Lucifer Publishing Company. Yeah, so,
but that's not Lucifer Trust. That's Lucifer Publishing. You know, like what?
Yeah, it's the same two people that started it. And so, yeah, I mean, and it is interesting. And then when you look into how the Freemasons tie in, kind of back to that star idea, the pentagram, the right side up star is the star of Lucifer, has Adam and Eve in it. And then the upside down star is the star of Satan, which is the same entity to most people, but to them it's completely different. And that has Samael, who's thought to be the snake in the Garden of Eden, and then Lilith. Those are the holy or the unholy men, man and woman, versus Adam and Eve, who are the holy ones that... Huh. You know, so it's interesting, you know, and the images there are pretty cool to look at too. But yeah, they see everything good and evil are equal but opposite. You know what I mean? That's how they see it. They don't think that evil always loses or good always wins. It's equal but opposite. That's why they portray so many, you know, checkerboard floors. That's another thing to try and notice in movies. You will not see a movie really in modern times without a checkerboard floor. You know what I mean? So yeah, it's kind of interesting to see that symbolism is everywhere for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. We just did a big deep dive into Eyes Wide Shut. I haven't released it yet, but yeah, that's a good one.
Eyes Wide Shut's really underrated, man. It's kind of slow for modern times, but it's a very, very underrated movie, man. Stanley Kubrick as a whole is a genius.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of stuff.
Yeah. Packed with symbolism.
Yeah, I think you always anyone with like a conspiracy podcast has to do an episode on him at some point, even if it's like been talked about a lot. You can always find new angles with something that he's doing, man. It's well, and shit, his daughter.
I'd listen to hours of analyzing Eyes Wide Shut, and yet we had this guy on, Sean McCann, and he started talking about it, and he was bringing up new stuff that like not. Not only have I not seen in it, every time I listen to something, it's stuff I haven't noticed watching it. And then, you know, it seems like I have to have exhausted that film. And yet we do that whole episode. Some of the stuff I'd heard of it before, but at the end, he's talking about like Steve Martin was supposed to be cast cast in that role.
Really?
That Tom Cruise had. And it's just like, what? Like,
yeah, that was that I was trying to, I saw Steve Martin on the, there's some new thing on Hulu that he's on the other day. And I saw him and I was like, wait, what, who is he supposed to be in?
Tom Cruise.
And I was like, it couldn't have been Tom Cruise. It had to have been like Balkan or somebody like that. And it's like, no, he was supposed to be Tom Cruise's character.
He was supposed to be the doctor.
That's so wild.
Which made me think, you know, it's like, oh shit, it's a little like that movie, The Jerk, that he was in, where it's if you find what you're looking for, see a doctor and get rid of it.
Yeah, one thing that I found looking into when I was trying to look into the Freemasons big time was that Fidelio is actually a password for becoming one of the degrees of Freemasonry. I think it's 19 or something. And Fidelio is that password that he uses to get into the house party where the guy's blindfolded doing all the weird stuff.
Yeah. So
there's some real things in there. And then he dies shortly after that. You know what I mean? So it's a weird, weird situation that you have there. So I don't know. The whole NASA thing with him too is wild. He gets a camera after working with, you know, NASA allegedly. So it's kind of fun to look into, man. But
yeah. Yeah, it's good stuff.
OG conspiracy topic, but yeah, man. I don't know if you wanted to talk about these royals and how weird they are and some of the stuff that I found about them.
Yeah, let's do it. I think it'll I think Deborah's a big fan of the royal family. She loves their weddings. She loves their prince's name, Philip.
She's a
big fan of Prince Andrew. You know,
I'm
she likes them all.
Sarcasm.
Wish I could have been there for
well,
that.
I did you watch were you into their wedding?
Me?
No, you, Deborah.
We know you were.
Which wedding? You mean Diana and William?
Well, that too. That's a little before. Well, not, I guess I was alive when that happened. But the most recent one that was a big deal on TV.
Oh,
Meghan and Harry.
Meghan and Harry. Thank you. Did I? No, I did not. I didn't watch it.
It's funny when you realize that, like, the Epstein case was buried because ABC wanted the rights to that wedding.
Yeah. Yeah, there was that footage that they caught.
Yeah, Amy Robach footage.
Robach.
Huh. Yeah, do you see that with the Ghislaine Maxwell case? You know, she got 20 years and then R. Kelly gets 30, you know what I mean? And they're basically doing the same thing, but I would say Maxwell was doing a lot worse than R. Kelly, you know what I mean? Yeah. Not to say that R. Kelly's a, you know, not deserving of 30 years. I think they should both be put down like animals, but you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I think that it's wild that we don't have one name that is, you know, in that black book of Epstein, or we don't have any clientele. I know Ivana Trump, Trump's wife that he had.
Yeah,
you know,
she used to cruise around with her, right?
She was a homie of Ghislaine, dude. You know what I mean?
Is that right? Huh?
Yeah, like she would go with her, Deborah, while they were like, while she was out cruising for young
women.
Yeah.
And that's one thing I was debating, and you know, you said you listen to Monday Night Masturbators. I was talking about that with some hardcore Trump supporters, and it's like, man, like we can't turn a blind spot. We gotta really kind of, you know, scrutinize everyone that's in that office. Not that they really have any real power, but we could get someone in there that would potentially be able to change some things. And yeah, things were pretty good under Trump, but man, look where we're at now, you know what I mean? So it's interesting to think, but
yeah, it's so crazy that Ghislaine gets that 20-year sentence. What did she get? What did she get sentenced for? Trafficking children?
Yeah. Or to who?
Doesn't there have to be someone that you trafficked them to?
Yeah. Hopefully more people will raise hell about that, man. I'm not saying like we should go and like storm the Capitol or anything. I'm just saying like we should, you know. We should not stop talking about that. Like everyone should open their episodes with like, what you know, who's Ghislaine Maxwell selling these kids to or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, I think everyone should talk about that constantly because all these people are still in power, man. And there was a big thing with that Pegasus software from Israel, the NSO group that I don't know if you're familiar with Pegasus, but Pegasus was, it's this technology that the Israeli Secret Service has. I don't think it's Mossad. It's something different because I didn't hear Mossad brought up, which might be, you know, misdirection. But it can basically get all your metadata and your phone, everything on your phone, and it can track you, geolocate you. And people have been assassinated allegedly using allegedly being paid by NSO group clients who use this Pegasus software to track down people. So, you know, everyone's being tracked. And then like once you start, maybe pissing the wrong people off, you know, they'll do something about it using some technology that all these people are part of. And a lot of those people were exposed. A lot of the elites were exposed in this Pegasus thing, but it was brushed under the rug. So, you know, they have their asses covered pretty good.
Yeah. Well, what can you tell us about these royals?
Oh, dude. So, we can skip through anything. I've got a lot here. I brought
Deborah,
up my old.
What are some questions that you would have, Deborah? This is for you.
Oh, well, okay. I would want to know who was behind Diana's death. I'd want to know.
Israel.
Israel was behind Diana's death?
Definitely, because she was trying to mix royal blood with Arab blood, with the Al-Fayed, right?
Uh-huh.
And what's interesting is, you know, they're part of the Merovingian bloodline. The Windsors are. And if you look at the Merovingian bloodline, there's a lot of people that are involved there. King James, Julius Caesar, Cleopatra, Ramses, Alexander the Great, the Bushes are involved, the Pacer family. You have a lot of high profile people, and they consider their blood to be very pure. And they didn't want that mixed with Arab blood for some reason. And then, so yeah, they're gonna definitely, you know, stop that from happening. Actually, Harry and Meghan are cousins, believe it or not. That's a weird little thing. I don't know if you'd heard that.
No, I've never heard that.
Yeah, Meghan. Oh, go ahead.
You go ahead and finish that thought. That's
good. I want to hear that stuff, Ryan.
Yeah, I was gonna say, so Meghan is they're 17th cousins. And Meghan Markle's half-brother, Thomas Markle Jr., said that she shares the bloodline of Robert the Bruce of Scotland. He was the king from 1306 to 1329, from what I have here. And then, yeah, I mean, that's just an interesting little thing. And they share the royal bloodline of King Edward III. And Thomas Wayne Markle, Meghan's dad, was the ancestor of Reverend William Skipper, who is a royal descendant that landed in New England in 1639. So they have, they go back in time to some high rollers in society. And just because, you know, we look at them and we think, you know, yeah, she's half black and actually attractive. And then you look at the, you know, royals and they look like they've been sleeping with their siblings for generations. They're still related. You know what I mean? It's 17th cousins, but still, you know, that's, they could have found so many different women that did not share the bloodline, but they have to keep that bloodline pure. And that's where Diana was going wrong, was she was reaching out to Al-Fayed. I think it was Dodi. And her sacrifice is actually really interesting too. I mean, the Merovingians actually founded Paris, and that's where she died. Right. And they wanted to kill her in the Ponte Alma bridge. And the Ponte Alma, they call the passage to the moon. And then the goddess Diana, who's like of an old like Roman goddess, was the goddess of like fertility, feminine energy, hunting, and the countryside, all these things. And they wanted to kill Princess Diana in this passage to the moon, the Pont de Alma, that bridge that under, what was it, a tunnel? And they wanted to sacrifice her in there because it had this little symbolism. I don't know, you know, it's an interesting idea for sure, but yeah, they're definitely related, and there's definitely some weird stuff that goes back, and you kind of wonder how these, like what the move of them going to Canada is, you know what I mean? It seems like them trying to distance themselves. That's gotta be another ploy of some kind.
Yeah. John Hamer is a amazing author and researcher, and we had him on a long time ago to do some stuff about the Titanic, which is kind of his specialty. But he knows a lot about the royal family, and he says that he knows someone who was in Paris the night that she died, an English person who was staying in a hotel, watched the local news show Diana Princess Diana involved in car crash, and then watches them walk her out of the car into the ambulance.
Mm.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hadn't heard that. They make it seem like the crash was so bad that her and Dodie both died. You know what I mean? So I don't know, man. They if you look into like where she was buried and the idea that potentially the royals ate her, they relocated her to this little island and ate her, you know, which I can get into later if we get to that point. It's definitely, there's something interesting about the way that these people operate, not just from like a glamorous perspective or like the unknown. It's like, wow, like what is it like to be these people? There's something really occult with them, dude. There's something really, really hidden and dark for sure. And they're very powerful. You know, we like to call them figureheads, but they are very, very high up in society. Like, I think even like our highest guesses would fall short of how powerful they are.
Didn't Princess Diana's father have some like humiliating job for the royal family or something?
Diana's dad?
Yeah. I thought they were. Oh no, that's
wasn't he. Was he like the royal butt wiper or something like that?
I mean, I that would not surprise me.
I swear to God.
That's an interesting.
But he was he's something. He's a title, right?
No, wasn't she like a commoner?
Yeah,
but up there.
Okay.
I mean, there was some connection. Because he dated her sister before he dated her.
Oh, interesting. Sister.
That is kind of interesting. Sisters for sure.
Dating the same man.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and what's interesting about Charles too, you know, because she was supposed to be with Charles, right? And then she starts screwing around on him. I'm sure you're familiar that like the whole Vlad the Impaler connection, Deborah.
Say the name again.
Vlad the Impaler. Had you heard that connection?
No.
Dracula.
With Charles. Yeah, so Vlad the Impaler is basically...
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't understand what you were saying. Vlad the Impaler. Yes, I know who Vlad the Impaler is.
Sorry, does it sound like I have marbles in my mouth over here? I'm trying to speak clearly. Sorry about that.
No worries. My ears are... So what's their connection?
Well, so if you're familiar with it, I'd be interested to think what you think about that because, you know, this weird dude out of, Romania... And, you know, what the original vampires are based off of, you know, they drink blood. This guy would go around and drink blood of his victims, right? Charles is the heir to the bloodline of Vlad the Impaler. And it is kind of interesting that their castle, Dracula's castle, was turned into a vaccine site, you know, where they're giving, you know, vaccines to people now. I've
heard that. That's... wild.
Yeah, as of May 12th, 2021, they started using I think Moderna vaccines and they're distributing them out of there and shooting people up, you know. So
what an interesting choice.
Yes, very, very weird. This was according to the New York Times. It's Brand Castle, it's called, said that the needles won't be drawing blood. They'll be administering Pfizer BioNTech vaccine. So not Moderna, Pfizer. Interesting, right? I mean, it's kind of like a mass sacrifice zone, it seems like at that point. But I don't know, man. The connections with them, I think, are definitely nothing to ignore. And
so did it come down from his father's line?
Yeah. So according to the Romania Tour Store website here, Charles is the great-grandson, 16 times removed, of Vlad the Impaler through the consort of George V and Queen Mary. And that is from his father's side, I believe. So, again, when you start hearing like 16 times removed and things, it might get a little like distorted or you might think that it's not a serious connection, but I'm sure he's a lot higher up than like any of us are. You know what I mean? As far as like the connection with them. I don't know. Kind of crazy stuff. What had you heard about the connection with Vlad the Impaler? Because that's interesting that you had looked into that yourself a little bit, Deborah.
No, I hadn't. I only know of Vlad the Impaler, but I don't know the connection to the royals. I've never heard that before.
Yeah. Like I said, you can go to the Romania Tour Store website, and they actually talk about this, and he's referenced that, you know, it feels like home to him. He was, so Vlad the Impaler, a little background on him. He's the Prince of Wallachia. And there's actually a little video game based on this whole thing. And there is a Illuminati card in the deck. That, you know, I'm sure you're familiar with the Illuminati card game. And there's a card that has Dracula's bloodline. It reads Dracula's bloodline. And, you know, I don't know what happens when you play that card, but it's clearly a reference to, you know, these are the people that are in power and so on. But yeah, it says Charles, Prince of Wales, which took its name based off of the Walha. I don't know if you've seen the flag of Wales.
Yeah, it's a dragon. Green and red. Yeah.
Yeah, a red dragon on a white flag standing on green grass. And so it's just kind of interesting. He is the Prince of Wales. And you get the dragon symbolism in there. There's just, to me, I find it interesting. I don't know what your guys' thoughts are. Chud, you've been quiet over there, dude. I'm interested to hear what you think about that stuff.
It goes outside of my realm of expertise. But I mean, I'm fascinated as all can be by all of that, because now Vlad, like, I've known of Vlad the Impaler, you know, my whole life. Like, I'm the horror guy. So like, you know, even when I was in middle school, like that was the stuff I was gravitating towards. And you'd hear about like all the bodies that were at that place, the impaled bodies, you know, I remember reading stuff about like hundreds of bodies being impaled. And this was like a form of defense that they would use to defend the castle, to scare the shit out of anybody from coming near there, you know. And then, you know, I just have to take your word, and I've heard many other people say this about the connection to Charles there. But that's if these people are connected to that, and they've been keeping these bloodlines intact for so long. And, you know, you're saying like 16th time removed and how that might be like a small connection to some people. It's not, especially when you look at the length of time that we're looking at. You know, it's a long time. They're definitely keeping an eye on where this blood is and when it's pure and when it's not. And I think that they go to extreme lengths to make sure that stays intact, such as killing someone like Princess Diana when she's trying to move outside of that.
Yeah. And she just seemed like she was really disgusted with the way that they operate. And I don't know if that's because she was getting pumped with drugs and then, you know, seeing these weird things, or if they were actually happening. But, you know, it's fun to think about and to speculate on, but there are some facts here that kind of tie them in with these, you know, blood drinking people of the past. And a lot of them suffer from porphyria, which is, they call the street name for porphyria is the vampire disease. It's where you have to have like common blood transfusions. And like, I don't know, maybe drinking blood would get you the same effect. I don't know. But porphyria is definitely a weird thing, and a lot of these guys have that in the royal family. So
maybe a blood transfusion is a modern, clean way of some type of ritual that once upon a time was drinking.
We've got that whole Peter Thiel thing, Ambrosia.
Mm-hmm.
Where, are you guys familiar with that?
Yeah, that's nasty stuff.
It's like a company that'll come and they swap out rich people's blood for like teenagers' blood.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
they say young adults, but yeah,
it's does Peter Thiel own that company? They show it in they have the Peter Thiel character in Silicon Valley, and they show him doing it in that.
Oh yeah, that's right. I remember that. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and it's like the idea of like, yeah, like get rid of your old blood, and, you know, fresh blood. You know, you'll be feeling younger and better after doing it. Just sounds like a new age treatment or something that involves,
yeah, you know, ambrosia.
And that, like I'm saying, I could see that being like a modern sanitized version of something that used to be blood drinking rituals that they're able to today. Like, we still do it, but we do it in a way, or maybe they do drink it, but they just say that it's these transfusions so that there's no question that there was blood and it was, you know, what was taken in by these people or whatever. Oh yeah, it was a transfusion, but really it was just in nice frosty mugs in the freezer or whatever, you know, and they were drinking it down. Cause yeah, it's weird stuff. That's for sure.
Yeah, man. Did you see too, you know, going back to Charles a little bit, that he is supposedly he's kind of like the highest up in the Skull and Bones of Yale?
Yeah, I've heard that too.
Who yes. is? Are you familiar with Skull and Bones, Deborah?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Okay.
Who's the highest up in it? Prince Charles?
Charles.
Charles, the one that's, you know, also connected to Vlad the Impaler and the Prince of Wales and all this stuff. So they're really promoting him to be like the next leader. And he's obviously it's his right. Just according to them, he's next in line.
That's the husband of Princess Di. They got three years.
The initial one. Yeah. Yeah. And
because he was out of the spotlight for a long time and now he's kind of reemerging.
Yeah. I mean, he's still kind of out of the spotlight, which is interesting. They're not really to me, at least. And I don't follow these people really closely. I just find it interesting, like the culture that's around them, you know what I mean? And the idea that, you know, people actually really are interested in this stuff. You know what I mean? It seems kind of like an outdated system to me.
Maybe he's just decaying really badly and they can't show him because he looks like Nosferatu now.
I mean, it's possible. You know what I mean? It's definitely possible because we've seen Andrew, and there is actually a scenario where Andrew can become king. You know what I mean? Like, and it's not out of line. If when Elizabeth dies or gets, you know, remorphed into whatever she's going to be in her next life, and then Charles does the same thing, you know, Andrew could be in charge, and he was the one that was doing all that wild stuff with Epstein.
Wouldn't it just automatically go to William?
I heard that it would go to Andrew, and I don't know. Again, I don't follow this very closely, but I just heard that there was a scenario that Andrew, because I know that. Didn't he get in some trouble with Elizabeth?
Andrew?
Bit? Yeah.
Well, he was married to, what's her name? Sarah Ferguson?
Fergie.
And they had their marital issues and.
Happens when you're a pedophile.
Yeah. You'd think so. But yeah, no, I mean, it is just interesting. But, you know, the queen right now, she's ruled the longest out of any monarch in Britain's history. What is it? 70 years?
Yeah. It's crazy long time.
How old
a fixture.
How old is she?
Like 96 or something.
Okay. It's, you know, it's also notable too here. Just like there's like the hero worship, the idol worship that goes on here in the United States of these royals. Like I have a section of my family that I don't associate with that much, but like they are, and I have to assume they are. I haven't really talked to them too much in the last couple of years, but my whole childhood they were obsessed with the whole royal family. Like they all knew about it. I remember when Princess Diana died, I said something in front of one of them to the effect of like, why should I give a shit? You know, like this so doesn't matter to me. And it was like offensive that I would say such a thing. And then even as time moved by, when I had my first child, it was around the time that there was a child being born this was 2013. Someone was having a kid. One of the kids was having a kid. And so many people, even outside that part of my family, like asked us if we were doing this because the royal family was doing this, because this was like a major, you know, news thing. And it was like, no, like they thought that we were, you know, like that we would be inspired by that to drop the birth control and try and have a baby, you know? And that was, I mean, like neither of us knew that that was happening. Like we couldn't fathom that. And they couldn't fathom that we were unaware that the royal family was expecting a new baby, you know? And they even, you know, like this is back to the family portion, like they really wanted to have Lanny's, what do you call it? Baby shower and stuff, like modeled after the royal family stuff. And she was just like, no, you know, like we don't know anything about these people. Lanny and I just pay zero attention. So it's just so bizarre to us that anyone would try and like push that onto to our life. And that's, and I'm saying all this just to describe, like, this is how much like of an idol worship there is for these people, but yet they have, theoretically anyway, no effect on our lives whatsoever.
Mm-hmm. It's true. Yeah. They don't really, well, I guess they do have an effect on their.
Do they? on their well, people?
in the circles we run in, we hear things like a bunch of our tax money is still going to them and all that stuff. Do you know anything about that, Ryan?
I mean, it's really hard to prove that. I believe it because, you know, they, with things like the Pilgrim Society, you know, they're very tied in with the elite of this country. And it's the same thing, you know, the Pilgrim Society,
they're just Anglophiles. They're people that want to be, want the world to be the English Empire again.
The WASPs, right? The white Anglo-Saxon Protestants. And that's what, why it's interesting. Anytime you have like a Catholic president, like we've had two, we know what happened to JFK. We've had,
Kennedy and Biden.
Yeah. And look what's going on with Biden. I mean, he's almost being made to look like another sacrifice situation, maybe not, you know, being killed and hopefully not. I mean, I can't stand the dude, but you never want to see that. It's a bad look for the country, but, you know, yeah, he seems like a sacrificial.
Yeah. It's like, you know, his whole existence is a humiliation ritual. Like, whose idea was it to get that guy on a bicycle?
Yeah, well,
I mean, that's planned out.
Yeah,
that's really well said too. His whole existence is a humiliation ritual. That's funny to think. I mean, it's sad, but like, yeah. I said, I would feel bad for just about anyone in this situation other than Biden. The things he said in the past and his policies of the past and just the type of person he is. I don't know if you knew this too about Biden, not to get derailed too much here, but the when he became senator, his entire family was in a massive car accident and he lost his wife and daughter that very year that he became senator.
Yeah.
So,
that's,
I mean,
what,
I think
that's what allowed him to marry the babysitter, right?
Yeah. That he's already was
a sacrifice.
Yeah. And he was clearly not qualified. A lot of people always said he was the dumbest senator. And
I saw this like news story on him from, he ran for president in like 1980 for the 84 seat or for 88, I can't remember which one. And I saw like this news footage, like some sort of like daytime or like a current affair type show, just like, and they were just making fun of him. He was a laughing stock at that point because he'd like plagiarized a bunch of speeches and told a bunch of lies, and they were like actually like calling him out for it back then.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and then you look at him and his operations in Ukraine and just the weird, and Ukraine, you know, there's a lot of connections with the Great White Brotherhood over there in Ukraine and like MK Ultra stuff. It's weird, you know, what Ukraine's been up to forever. And they're pretty tight with the Ukrainian, you know, government. So,
I mean, you don't even have to get like conspiracy. Like I tell Deborah all the time, is him sitting in front of the CFR telling them how he's bribes them for money to get rid of the prosecutor who's looking into their shady business dealings there, you know, and he says it on video, right, to the CFR. And Ukraine's just like the most, it's just where people go to launder money and do shady stuff and do coke with trafficked hookers and stuff like that. It's just a sad place, you know?
Yeah.
It's a sad, exploited place, like the Appalachia of Eastern Europe.
Yeah, I mean, it's sad, but and that's what's frustrating too about the aid that, you know, our tax dollars are going to. You know what I mean? We can't fix that.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, I mean, the aid that we're giving is probably ending up back with the big guy or with, you know, it's just another way to launder money. And all the military equipment, it's just like we need to get rid of old military equipment so we can justify a military budget to get new military equipment. So people are just offloading massively old outdated Javelin missiles and tanks and stuff over there so we don't have to deal with it anymore.
Yeah.
It's like a big landfill for like obsolete equipment.
Well, and whenever, you know, again, whenever does like when the United States arms a country, when does that ever work out in the United States favor?
I mean, we just need to make like a new version of Rocky III of like Rocky. Have you ever seen that? It's when Sylvester Stallone goes and is
fights fighting. The Russian, right?
He's fighting with the Taliban.
Hell yeah, dude. I'm down for that.
Yeah.
The Taliban's an interesting thing too, man. Just how that, there's so many freaking rabbit holes that you can get into with the way that the world works. And believe it or not, I do think that the UK or the House of Windsor is behind all of this stuff in one way or another. I think it does go back to them. They're tied in with the UN, who he spoke about. They're tied in with all these people, man. And, you know, I know that we wanted to get into Diana a little bit here, and there's a theory that's out there that makes sense, that she was sacrificed because she wanted to expose the blood rituals that these people were doing. And a lot of people, like a lot of locals of this island that she was supposedly buried at, don't really believe that she was buried there. And they think that she was taken back to the, you know, Buckingham Palace and actually eaten there. You know, she was pregnant too. A lot of people don't remember that.
Oh yeah, well, she was. She was pregnant. Yeah, with his
baby. Allegedly Dodi Al-Fayed's baby, supposedly, right?
Yeah.
So the LA Times actually had this source named Betty Andrews, and Betty Andrews was claiming that Princess Diana's coffin was taken to Althorpe for burial, but they say that the coffin was empty, and they actually brought her, maybe according to what you were saying, your friend said, actually alive. And then they carried out this sacrifice, you know, while she was alive. Who knows? They said that these villagers in this little island were like rushed into their homes by military and police. They brought this coffin out. They had the crematorium running all night. And again, this is according to Betty Andrews. I don't know who Betty Andrews is, but this is who the LA Times sourced in an article, you know, regarding the whole situation of her death. Crazy to think about, but I mean, I don't think it's that out of line for like the kind of stuff that we get into. And this Christine Fitzgerald was a healer and a friend of Princess Diana for 9 years, and really, really knowledgeable about esoteric knowledge and just really into like occult stuff. And Diana supposedly told this Christine Fitzgerald that the royals wanted to kill her in 1989. So I mean, this is something she suspected them supposedly of you know, sacrificing her in one way. And she actually like flat out referred to them as reptiles and lizards. Diana did. So according to this lady, so maybe she's referring to it the way that Chud was kind of talking about, where it's like, you know, a matter of the reptile brain, or maybe she had seen, you know, them actually kind of change into these things.
So do you think they had this planned even prior to her marriage?
I would say so. It seems that way. I mean, I could even go as far as saying that like her, like maybe Charles was kind of getting a little bit fed up with her uppityness and not feeling like she was, you know, chosen to fulfill this great honor of being part of the royal family. And they were like, yeah, set her up with this, you know, filthy, you know, because they look at the Arabs as like a nasty group of people, and they act like they're so much higher up than everybody. So yeah, set them up with this dude and let's kill both of them. You know what I mean? Obviously the Mossad's always kind of tied in. And I think that Adam, you're right on point by saying that the Mossad, you know, carried this out, or I don't know if you said Mossad specifically, but you said Israel.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people that believe that, like not just like people from mainstream, but like it's a credible theory. I can't come up with a better answer other than the Mossad personally. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. This idea of them just becoming like reptiles or at least thinking that way, there's proof according to this you know source, this Christine Fitzgerald, that she referred to them that way. And maybe that kind of stems a lot of the theories that we have today. But then you get into Arizona Wilder, and
who's she?
Arizona Wilder was like this MK Ultra victim.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah. And she was, I guess, a friend of Diana as well. And she said that the royals, that from an account from Princess Diana, the royals had exposed themselves to Diana in a ritual called the Awakening of the Bride. And this kind of seems like it could have been something with like when she was actually pregnant or when they were about to get married. And like maybe they like artificially inseminated her. Is that the word? Mm-hmm. In this weird ceremony where this is when she was pumped full of drugs. And whether it was like through like a, you know, some drinking or just kind of goofing around or whatever, but then they get her super, super fucked up. And then, you know, she starts seeing them turn into reptiles and do some wild stuff. But yeah, this is the first week of July in 1981. And then she married Charles on the 29th of that same month. And yeah, heavily drugged, meant to think that she was hallucinating. And when this is when, like I said, she saw them turn into reptiles and all this stuff. And then when you look into when these people are born, who was it? Harry was born on the summer solstice of that year. A lot of these kids are actually meant to be born at certain points throughout the year. So it just seems like it's all a big ritual to them for sure. I don't know what your thoughts are on that.
That's crazy. That's crazy. I didn't know that he was born on the summer solstice.
It's just more pieces to a puzzle that just continues to just
grows and grows.
It just keeps going together more and more that there's, you know, it's like I was saying towards the beginning of this, I'm certain that there's something here. I see more and more of it all the time. I can't articulate what it is. I don't know if anyone can. I listen to a lot of people who articulate portions of it, but you know, having births on symbolic days on purpose, that's wild.
Yeah, I'm trying to find exactly where I have it in my notes here. These are old notes, and I'm just trying to remember exactly where. Because yeah, it's like it's not just him. There's quite a few of the royals that were born on significant dates and times of the year. Kind of scrolling through my notes here.
And you gotta wonder, are those natural births or are they like, you know, C-sections?
Or yeah, induced in one way, right?
Or just like surgically removed so that they came out that day. So that gets, or do they even not get born those days, but they symbolically change birth certificates?
Yeah, say they're born.
Yeah, like, oh, you know, like they shoot for the 21st of June, that's a solstice, but you know, it'll come hopefully within a week. They can induce it within a week, one direction or the other, and allow the public to believe that it happened that way. Or is it important that the person be born on that day? Or is it just important to have the perspective in the minds of the general public, so that if we're all thinking it happened in a certain way, that's what matters? Who knows?
Yeah, it could be really either one, dude, honestly. Okay, yeah. So yeah, this is where it is. This kind of ties in with Dodi Fayed's dad, Muhammad Al-Fayed. He was supposedly hanging out with the queen mother and Pindar, the Rothschilds. And, you know, Pindar is the nice little, you know, leader of the world, this big old albino lizard.
The albino reptilian that lives in the middle of the earth, Deborah.
Yes. In Antarctica, right? He comes out of Antarctica.
Yeah.
The Rothschilds.
Pindar. Okay.
Pindar, yeah, look into him. He's a fun one. The Rothschilds and Tony Blair before he met Diana in 1980, and then claimed that Diana suffered from multiple personality disorder. And this is kind of like where MK Ultra might come in. Yeah,
what's that a side effect from?
Yeah. This is what Arizona Wilder is saying. She insisted that Diana was impregnated by Pindar's sperm. This is what Arizona Wilder is saying. So the artificial insemination, some unholy, like bastardized version of, like, you know, the Virgin Mary and whatnot. And William, impregnated by Pindar through, you know, Diana, was born June 21st, 1982, which is the summer solstice of that year. So yeah, William was the big one, supposedly a son of Pindar.
What's he up to these days?
William?
Yeah.
To be honest, I don't know, man.
He was doing some of the queen's duties when, you know, because she's so wobbly now, she can't make it to everything. And I don't know, there was just something in the news about him yelling at a photographer for taking pictures of his children.
Oh, that nice. Was like
this week or last week.
But I wonder if he's ever been to Antarctica.
I bet they all have.
Well, do you ever see him, like, do you ever see him interacting with Charles? Because isn't Charles supposed to be his father?
Yeah. Yeah. There was I saw a picture, actually, of the two of them kind of smiling and talking together. Huh. But you know, anybody can do that.
Oh, sure. No, I just find it interesting because, like, you don't really think of him as being the dad for some reason. Like, again, I don't follow these people really closely, but it does just seem, it just seems set up. You know what I mean? I'm not saying that a giant lizard is his dad, but I mean, the story that this Arizona Wilder character is talking about, and she insists on this, you know what I mean?
Well, this guy, he's got a fucking comb over. I'm looking at some pictures of him now.
Oh yeah, you can probably recognize him, right? He's got that Kate Middleton or whatever. What's her name? That's his chick.
Yeah.
Yeah. So but yeah, I have some interesting things about and I can read through these little testimonials from Arizona Wilder in regard to the Queen Mother, the Queen, and then Prince Charles and what she says of them. So this is just me reading directly off of what Arizona Wilder says that Princess Diana says about the Queen Mother. First of all, she says she's a cold, 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 nasty person. None of her cohorts even trust her. They have named an altar or mind control program after her. So I think this is Monarch, right? The Monarch program.
Yeah.
They call it the Black Queen, and they've seen her sacrifice people. I remember her pushing a knife into someone's rectum at the night that two boys were sacrificed. One was 13, the other was 18. And you see a lot of this stuff going on in Canada, right? They have that whole thing where it was the Queen, and I think Charles went to Canada, no guards, no one around them, and they went into it was like an indigenous population.
Yeah, the native schools.
Yeah, and like a bunch of kids went missing and stuff. So that could potentially be something that's tied into this. And then back to this here. You need to forget that the Queen Mother appears to be a frail old woman. When she shapeshifts into a reptilian, she becomes very tall and strong. Some of them are so strong they can rip out a heart, and they all grow by several feet when they shapeshift. Exactly what the lady who saw Edward Heath said, among many others. So that's one account from the Queen Mother apparently turning into a giant lizard. And then the Queen, what Diana has said about this individual here. I've seen her sacrifice people and eat their flesh and drink their blood. One time she got so excited with bloodlust that she didn't cut the victim's throat from left to right in the normal ritual. She just went crazy, stabbing and ripping at the flesh after she'd shapeshifted into a reptilian. When she shapeshifts, she has a long reptile face, almost like a beak, and she's an off-white color. The Queen Mother looks basically the same, but there are differences. She also has like bumps on her head, and her eyes are very frightening. She's very aggressive. So again, that's the Queen. And then Charles, I don't know if you believe any of this, but I just think it's interesting that someone like of high status says this, you know what I mean?
I believe all of it.
Hey man, you know, we all, it's weird. And then this is of Prince Charles. I've seen him shapeshift into a reptilian and do all things the Queen does. I've seen him sacrifice children. There are a lot of rivalry between them for who gets to eat what part of the body and who gets to absorb the victim's last breath to steal their soul. I have also seen Andrew participate, and I've seen Prince Philip and Charles's sister Anne at the rituals, but they didn't participate when I was there. When Andrew shapeshifts, he looks more like one of the lizards. The royals are some of the worst. It's weird how they say it. She says, okay, as far as
they're just the worst.
Yeah, she says they're some of the worst. Okay, as far as enjoying the killing, enjoying the sacrifice, and eating the flesh, they're some of the worst of them. They don't care who sees them at rituals. They are what they are. They show it outright. They don't care if you see it. Who are you going to tell? Who's going to believe you? They feel it's their birthright, and they love it. They love it. She says twice. So direct quotes from Diana, I guess, which is an interesting thing for somebody to say. And this is through Arizona Wilder. Arizona Wilder is saying that these are like direct quotes from Diana. I don't know, man. Crazy. It might just seem like some psycho talk, but
seems like psycho talk, but that doesn't mean that it's not true. Also doesn't mean it's true, but definitely. Yeah. It's just interesting to hear. That's for sure.
It surely is.
Yeah.
Just a candle in the wind.
What's going to happen when the queen does keel over? Charles will become king.
Yes.
And it'll just keep on progressing the way.
That's a good question, Deborah.
Yeah, you'd think so, right? I mean, it is a great question. I think that it would just be, you know, Charles, they follow their pattern of who's supposed to be in charge and what's going to happen. I don't know. It'd be interesting to see if they do sacrifice anyone again. That was kind of a it seems like a once in a lifetime thing with the whole Diana situation. You know what I mean? But there's no way that guy was just speeding and just got into an accident or some, you know, there's always like so many people around any of these important individuals that are traveling. I know she was kind of sneaking around, but even like Dodi Al-Fayed, he's not just traveling alone and sneaking around like that. They have people around them and you know, there's like a motorcade usually. So I see it as an absolute sacrifice. And then you, again, going back to what we were talking about at the beginning of this, where the moon and the Ponte Alma, where she died in Paris, founded by this bloodline, you know, the Merovingians, which they are a part of, it has sacrifice written all over it to me personally. I don't go as far as saying that all these people turn into lizards. I don't necessarily believe that yet. I could see it being possible, but I definitely think it was a sacrifice of some sort. So yeah, to answer your question, I think Charles becomes in charge and nothing is different.
Yeah, Charles in charge.
Well, exactly. We hear the theme song at that point.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe, dude. Isn't that funny to think too? That could be like some weird predictive programming.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Did the driver die in the crash also?
You know, I don't remember. I was a baby when this happened.
Yeah, I don't remember if he did. I'm thinking he didn't, but they wouldn't want, unless he's part of the whole little
charade. That was Pindar. Pindar was driving the limo, probably. You know what I mean?
I'm gonna get John Hammer back on the show to talk to him about that. He knows. So
about Pindar?
No, about her being alive at the scene of the wreck.
Yeah, that's really.
Yeah, check out John Hamer, Hamer. He's written some really good books and stuff.
So. Hamer, okay.
Yeah, English guy. Yeah,
nice.
Ryan, this is a lot to take in. I think we've kept you for long enough. This is so much fun. How the fuck am I supposed to like title this episode? What am I going to write about? We went everywhere.
You know, Lucius Trust, you know, the Royals, the UN. Maybe yeah. Like something in regard with the power structure. I don't know, man. You know, it's this was a blast though. It was just fun talking with you three.
Yeah. Took a long 136 episodes. We should have done it all much sooner. So.
Oh, is this your first time on here, Ryan?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. It is.
Yeah.
Cool.
Well, we'll have to do it. Not the last time.
Yeah. Tell everybody about the show and how they can support you.
Oh yeah, I appreciate it, man. Dangerous World Podcast. I do a Patreon. It's just patreon.com/dangerousworldpodcast. Got a merch store, dangerousworldstore.com. And got some other things in the works that I'm helping a company get some like conspiracy themed products out. So hopefully we'll have some fun with that and try to build like a cool culture that's unifying around the conspiracy people. You know, there's a lot of like bickering and weird stuff like that. So it'd be kind of cool just to, you know, freaking just be chill and have some fun and make fun of ourselves a little bit. That's why I think it's fun to talk about Pindar and all this weird stuff that just seems impossible. But at the end of the day, man, if lizards started falling out of the sky right now and saying that they ruled the world this whole time, I don't think anyone would be that surprised. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's just because of how wild things have been. So, yeah, man, it's fun to talk about. So hopefully, you know, we can just keep building this cool thing that all of us have going for ourselves, where it's just talking about stuff that we like and more people can do this full time and just enjoy what they do. So yeah. I appreciate the opportunity to talk with you guys, man. This is a blast.
Yeah, anytime. And then they can find you on Monday Night Master Debaters as well. And yeah. So I'll put everything in the show notes. And beyond that, man, we really, really appreciate it. This was a ton of fun. I laughed a lot. So I had a great time.
Yeah, good times, yeah, man.
Thank you.
Thanks again, yeah. Ryan.
Thanks.
But we'll talk soon. Oh yeah. Keep me in the loop on the upcoming UFC.
Dude, I will. I know you said you wanted to be a judge. So yes, you will absolutely be a judge. We're trying to get that started this upcoming month in July. So you'll be the first to know.
Cool. Sounds good, guys.
Alrighty.
All right. Thank you all.
Peace out.
Bye.
Bye.
I'm not doing this for you. I'm doing this for me. I'm not signed on to killing all those old people or those black babies. Fuck you, motherfucking New World Order. I will get your ass. Delay that. It pisses me off. You sign on to playing God, you get burned. And all you dumbasses that serve the New World Order are idiots. Playing God all day. Deciding who lives and who dies.
Penis man.
And then I find out they're all screwing little kids and devil worshiping. Of course they are. Oh, you're the big elites. Oprah Winfrey and Ted Turner and Bill Clinton and Epstein, all in that 7-story pervert building in New York. What a bunch of freaks. And the fact that those pedophiles, and I'm calling Oprah Winfrey one, hope she burns in hell. Every damn one of you's a piece of crap. And you're going to be judged. So you just continue to enjoy hurting babies and hurting old people and hurting homeless people and turning us all into a bunch of idiots. Because you will be destroyed.
Mom, I'm transgender.